Welcome to Soul Discovery with Kelly and Kelly. Today, we welcome Elena Mark to the show. Elena is a multifaceted being who loves connecting to nature, exploring with her cat Raisin, and building strong and healthy communities. She holds a bachelor's degree in education and French studies, is a certified forest school practitioner, and has done extensive training with the Emotional Literacy Movement, which helps to bring emotional awareness to the world. Elena is passionate about deprofessionalizing the arts and empowering people with the confidence to express and create without limits, which is the driving force behind her workshop this summer at the Of Earth and Fire Women's Festival. Welcome, Elena. It's nice to have you on our show today.
Oh, thank you so much, Kelly. It's an honor to be here. I'm super excited to have a conversation with you today.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to learning more about you. So my very first question to you is, what kind of things in your life bring you joy?
Oh, that's such a good question to ask. You know, my first thing that comes to my mind is time outside. I love being able to connect with nature in any way possible. I bought a canoe at the end of last summer season.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, I am very excited. Although I didn't want spring this early. I am excited for spring to come, the waterways to open up, and for me to get out there. I love adventuring. I have a cat. She's a leash trained and she comes camping with me. So lots of outside time. That's one thing that really brings joy to my life.
Nice. That sounds wonderful. And we were talking a little bit before that you have a tiny home, correct?
I do. Yeah. I've been living in it since May. So that has been a really fun adventure this last year. It's actually my first time living with myself. I've always had roommates or lived with family. So I think that's kind of been the biggest hurdle, honestly, outside of the tiny home living is just, you know, you're in charge of all the chores and all the cooking and everything like that. But the whole adventure in tiny home living has been really magical, and it's connected me more to nature. I live in 247 square feet. Like, I do not spend a lot of time inside, basically sleeping and eating.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. Now, what brought you to that, if you don't mind my asking? Like, because for us too, we have a property outside the city, but we want to get some tiny homes to put on there for guests, or just for us to have like our own space away from the main house. So, but tiny living, like, tell us a little more about that, because I've seen documentaries or videos about people that do it, but knowing someone who actually does it, how did you come to make that decision for yourself and then go, you know, the whole process?
Yeah, it kind of came through a series of interesting events. So I was teaching forest school in Winnipeg, and got really well acquainted with the family that is currently my landowners, and we call each other farmly because we all live here together. And I've always been interested in alternative living. I've never really been one to go by the seeds of, quote, like normal things for somebody. And so when I got into forest schooling and met these people, you know, they had tried to do homesteading. They have four kids, and it's a lot of work to work full time, have four kids, and try to homestead. And we kind of got dreaming about how, like I said, I have a huge connection to nature. I've always spent time in the bush in the summer. My dad and I have gone, I think this year will be our 17th annual canoe trip in the summer.
Wow.
Yeah. So I always knew I really wanted to live connected to nature, and I grew up in Winnipeg. So the opportunity to move rurally, but we're not too far. We live around Selkirk. So the opportunity to explore what rural living is like and have the big garden, but also the community to do that with, when it presented itself, I just had to jump onto it.
Nice.
So yeah, originally I was going to build a tiny home. I have no building experience, but luckily one of my friends is a house builder. So he was going to design it with me and build. And then last Christmas, one of my mom's friends said that they knew somebody who was selling their tiny home. So it was kind of these events that happened, you know, meeting the family. Then I moved, they have another mobile home. So I moved there just for a few months, while we were going to build and design. And then all of a sudden, before I had even started doing any research, I basically found this dream tiny home. The family that was living in it for 5 years, they had built it and they just upgraded, or I shouldn't say upgraded, tiny home living is amazing. And they just found another opportunity to have a permanent house. And so they were selling their tiny home and they had had a lot of people look at it, but nothing really clicked. So I think when we met, it was just kind of supposed to be mine. And now I've been living in it since May and, you know, doing the, I don't have running water. So there's composting toilet and a bucket system for the sink. I do have electrical. I'm just hooked up to the main house for my fridge and, you know, some lights. And then, you know, wood stove. I have a Hobbit wood stove. The wood can only be like 15 centimeters, basically half a ruler. So lots of wood processing. And it's been a huge learning curve this winter. I mean, I am a bit worried for Earth with the warm weather we've been having here in January in Manitoba and February. However, for my first winter being off grid or partly off grid, it's been a blessing.
Yeah, for sure. Because we've had unseasonably warm weather, especially for January. So that must have made, although your winter a little easier without the minus 30, 40, 50 temperatures that we usually get for a long stretch of time.
Yeah, for sure it has. And it's interesting, the trees are starting to bud already. So I'm curious to see some of them at least. I'm curious to see what the spring and summer will bring for us here.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what happens with our weather. You know, it's, I don't necessarily like that the weather patterns are changing that way because, you know, we expect the cold winter and there's, you know, there's reasons for having that kind of climate. So
totally. I really agree with you, Kelly. I actually like winter. I mean, this is kind of part of my story, I guess. I grew up absolutely hating winter. My mom's not a fan, you know, it's cold, everybody complains about it. And it actually was leading to a lot of depression. And, you know, November would come and I would get so panicked. Oh my gosh, winter's coming. I hate winter. That I thought, you know, if I'm choosing to live in Manitoba, I have to change my mindset around this. So it's been about 5 years that I've really intentionally been doing that. And now I love it. And I'm sad that it's not cold, because I love the winter activities. I haven't been skating. I probably won't be skating this year because all of the outdoor rinks have closed now for melting. So, you know, I'm grieving that. And it's an interesting reflection for me because 5 years ago, I would have been thrilled, ecstatic that it's warm. And now I feel like, oh, I missed the snow. It was, I have a tin roof and it was really beautiful to listen to the rain last night. However, it was also raining on February, whatever, 7th.
Well, and in the winter, like I know as a child, I didn't necessarily love winter either. Summer was always my favorite. I think summer was just my favorite because as a kid, we would always go off to the cottage or we'd go camping or something like that. So it was more about that getting away, I think, when I was a kid. But as an adult, I like winter. I love winter walks. I love when it snows. I'm not a fan of the minus 50, you know, on the wind chill. But also it has its place. Like it's nice when it's that cold, it's nice to cuddle up with a blanket and a good book and maybe your kids don't go anywhere and we just stay together. So I remember when my kids were little, I used to love snow days or cold days because they wouldn't go to school on cold days. Cause then we just didn't have to go anywhere. We could just stay home, bundle up, stay warm, spend time.
Totally. There. And in our busy society, those days where you can guilt-free stay at home and hang out with your family and curl up on the couch with a book, you know, those are very important days.
Yeah, for sure. And they're just great days like to connect and everything. So you mentioned that you're a four school practitioner. I would love to know more about that because I know some of my kids are, well, they're not having children yet, but they're young adults thinking about families and alternatives to regular school, I suppose. And so tell us more about that. I'd love to hear more about it.
Sure. So I can tell you how I got into it. I do hold a degree from the Faculty of Education at the University of Winnipeg. And when I was doing my practicums, and I went, grew up through the public school and did fine, like the school system was all right for me. I just was seeing so many kids in, I have a element like early years elementary degree. So many kids 10 and under that just hated school. Mm-hmm. And it hurt me so much because these children have a lot of years to go in the system. And I was trying to figure out why, right? Why do they not like it? Well, everyone loves recess. Everyone loves the opportunity to go outside or gym, right? Like that learn through play. So when I got really interested in project-based learning and inquiry and everything, I found forest school. Forest schooling originated actually in the UK as a early years program and has expanded. There's a school in the States that I'm connected with. I wish I could remember the name. Marshall Hilltoppers, maybe. Don't quote me on that, though. But they run forest schooling till grade 12. They have outdoor ed programs. And I think that the benefits of forest schooling are confidence building. You know, kids just, I love being connected with nature. Kids find peace in nature, right? Nature is a natural balancer of our nervous systems. And yeah, so I taught kindergarten and grade one at a forest school right out of university called Beaver Creek Academy. It's unfortunately no longer running, but it was an independent school in Winnipeg. And just seeing kids that had such high behavioral, I say needs, but really like, that's a whole other tangent I could go down where people think that you need classroom management and all those things. I just think it's a way that kids express what their needs are, right? So with really extreme behaviors, being so calm and regulated outside and being able to have positive, you know, positive ways to release their energy. If there was something that was upsetting them, they could go, we'd say like, okay, go find a tree and run around your favorite tree 8 times, right? And then they come back and they're ready to face the challenge that they had. Maybe it was another altercation with a student or something like that. And so seeing those benefits, the fine and gross motor skills that kids get to develop in nature schools, I just was so drawn to it. And then the family that I live beside now, their kids went to the school. And then unfortunately, the program that kids used to come to this land that I live on now twice a week, and that program was getting cut. And we thought, we can't just let it slide. Like, this is such an amazing program. So actually myself and another educator, two other educators came and home-based on the land here. And then we ran independent forest schooling for another year. And that was last year. It's not running this year, but there's lots of dreams in the future about getting a program back up and running.
Oh, that's awesome. I know what you were saying too about, you said outdoor education. And I remember going through school and we had outdoor education where we'd have to learn how to learn survival skills outside. We learned a lot of different depending on the time of year that we were doing something, there would be a lot of activities that were geared towards like being outside in that particular climate. And I enjoyed that. You know, that was such a fun part of the day, and not just physical education, but it's so important, I think, too, that kids connect to their body that way. You know, totally. A lot of times they have agitation and they're irritated or they're upset and they don't know what to do with it or how to express it. But by you giving them something physical to do, let's like burn off that energy and then come back and calmly talk it out.
Yes, I would say very few people can regulate by sitting at a desk.
I would agree.
You know, yeah. So yeah. Did you grow up in an urban center, Kelly?
No, I grew up in out near Enola, Manitoba. So okay. I grew up out in the country, but I did spend a lot of time in the city, though. I was an elite athlete, so I trained a lot in my teenage years. So that wasn't, but when I was a kid, like I was outside all the time.
Yeah, because you find that a lot, I think, in rural schools. They have a lot more outdoor ed. And I don't know if it's just the type of kid, like most kids who live rurally play outside substantially more than kids that live in urban centers, or just access to things, right? It's hard to run forest school at a school with a field that has no trees or any kind of outdoor ed stuff. So although I really think with past COVID, we're really seeing a huge insurgence of people that are recognizing the benefits of taking your class outside, even just free play, right? For kids to develop their own sense of justice and games and everything like that, engaging in free play versus all these scheduled activities that I was a very scheduled child. Mm-hmm. And I think that as an adult now, like I get to play all the time, and that's incredible.
Yeah, that is wonderful. It's wonderful to have things in your life that you look at more as play than if you look at everything like work.
Totally.
For one of my blog websites, there was a January, they did this blog prompt to get people writing more and things like that. And one of the topics was, what do you do for play? Or what do you consider play? And I was like, everything I do. I don't do anything.
Oh, I love that.
Not fun.
Yeah.
So it's like, even all my jobs that I have, I enjoy them. And there isn't anything that I have in my life that I'm like, ugh, I have to do that.
Totally. Me too. Yeah. And I think it's important that people cultivate lifestyles like that. Right. I tried the 9-to-5 desk job, and it was the worst 6 weeks of my life. Sitting in the air, like in the summer, air conditioned in a sweater, watching people at the splash pad. I thought, this is not where I want to be. I want to be on the splash pad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when you were teaching forest school, because I know that you also have with your degree in education that you majored in French studies, correct?
So yeah.
So you also offer them bilingually as well?
Not currently, to be really honest. My French, I can't even think of the English word now. I always say aptitude, mes aptitudes français, but like my skills in French are not, they're very intermediate. We didn't really get a lot of opportunities to practice orally in university, which is kind of unfortunate. So I take any opportunity to practice, but I'm not confident yet to have anything like that. However, if there was somebody else out there who, you know, had maybe French as their first language and wanted to collaborate, that would be absolutely incredible. I have no expectations for what my future holds. I just try to say yes to things that sound fun and go along with it.
Oh, that's awesome. So whereabouts, you don't have to give the exact location, but whereabouts do you live currently? Is it like a little north of our capital city here is Winnipeg. So I'm kind of south of the city, and I don't know where you are in relation to.
Yeah, I am about 20 minutes north of the perimeter of the Winnipeg perimeter. Yeah, just east of Selkirk, if you know where that is.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's actually really nice. I teach dance in the city at the Royal Winnipeg Ballet. I grew up teaching there. Yeah. So art has always been a huge part of me. Mm-hmm. Performing arts when I was younger, and as I've gotten older, I've gotten a lot more into just expressive arts as a whole umbrella. So it's nice because when I drive in, it takes me about 35, 40 minutes to drive in, but I still get to live rurally and enjoy the peace and the birds.
Yeah.
And those sirens. You know, I think I hear like 5 sirens a year at home.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nice.
Well, I've noticed the uptick in sirens since the COVID happened, where we live in a very quiet neighborhood, but it seems like almost every day you'll hear something, and I don't know.
Oh, wow. Why.
But yeah, so it's gotten a little noisier, but so that's interesting. I did not know. So did you study ballet when you were younger?
I did. So the Royal Winnipeg Ballet is a huge organization. They have their professional company that tours worldwide. If you go to see the Nutcracker, you'll see the company dancers. And if you do see the Nutcracker, which I highly recommend, it's very cute and beautiful, but you'll also see a lot of our recreational students. They play the polar bears and the reindeer and the Mountie and the mice. Okay.
Yeah.
So I grew up dancing in that program, and that's where I teach currently. I teach musical theater.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I
more about you that way. That sounds fun.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it's something that's been a part of me for my whole life that I forget that people don't know that unless I tell them. Right? Like when you become an adult and you don't really have, I have a few friends, well, two friends from high school. Although we didn't meet in high school, we met at dance, but around that age, who obviously know that. But other than that, right? People don't know things about you unless you tell them, which I forget.
Yeah. I know. It's like, it's the same thing with having like my kids, is that I've had this whole other life that didn't include them. And then just more recently, we've been talking about some of the things that I did when I was younger. They're like, we didn't know that about you back then. Yeah. I'm like, I guess so. I mean, it's just my life, but you came along later. So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love those conversations with my parents as well.
Yeah.
Like even I'm in my late 20s and my parents are snowbirds in Mexico now. So my brother and his partner and I all went down and we shared stories, or my parents shared stories I had never heard. I thought, what the heck? That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you don't realize as a kid that your parents have these other lives about them that you don't.
Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that firsthand being an educator. Seeing kids that you teach in schools or dance like at the grocery store, and they're like, some of them just stare at you wide-eyed and they're not quite sure. And other ones are trying to put together like why you're in the grocery store, but also they're in the grocery store.
Yeah. Why are we here together? What?
I don't live in the classroom.
I know. I used to teach gymnastics to kids for a long time, and it was the same thing where you'd run into them in public or you'd see them at a different event with their parents. And then it was like, this is weird. They'd always be like, this is weird seeing you not in the context that I'm used to seeing you.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Or you get the miss, like I get Miss Elena. I'm like, oh, right. That is a persona I have in this world.
Yeah, that's how somebody knows you, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm not thinking about that when I'm in my pajamas at the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. So you were saying too in your bio that you are working to deprofessionalize the arts. So I want to talk a little bit more about that and what that means to you.
Yeah. So I'm really grateful about all the things we've been talking about today because they're kind of puzzle pieces to answer this question. So the first part was like those grade twos that hated school. They also would say things like, I can't draw. I can't sing. I don't dance. And I thought, how many of us as toddlers scribble on a piece of paper and it's on the fridge for weeks or years? My dad kept every piece of paper I ever put a pen to, right? And we think that is art. So I always say to people, like, there is no rules in art. There's no one saying like you are bad at art, right? That's not, in my opinion, it's not possible. So hearing that, I thought, how can I, you know, make it so that kids and people, because you hear that also with adults, oh, I don't dance. Well, can you move your shoulders up and down to a beat or not even to a beat? Can you step touch? Can you sway your hands? You're moving, you're dancing. It's just all in our minds where we see, and social media has played a huge role in this. We see people who are professionals in their field, which is amazing. And we think if we aren't like them, we're not able to do this. And art, I think art should not be that way. I think there's totally a place for it. But I also work for an organization called the Emotional Literacy Movement, and we do emotional literacy education for communities. And a huge part of that is creative expression. And creative expression is such a healing tool, which we need in society. So putting walls around yourself where like, I don't draw. Well, can you draw a circle and then put petals on it? Like you just drew a flower, you know, or a sun is circle and lines. Everybody can do that. right? So just trying to instill confidence in people that they don't have to be the best at whatever they're doing to enjoy it and to benefit from it and to heal through art.
That's wonderful. That's brought up a lot for me too. Thinking back to like when I was coaching, like I did coach at a high level after I stopped competing, but I also really loved that grassroots level and going to different communities and helping them develop their programs because they were just having fun. And that's yeah. really what, and there's a place for that, for having fun. It doesn't always have to be like at this extreme level. And like you said, a lot of people look at professional athletes or they look at Olympic athletes and they're like, well, I can't do that. And they tell themselves a story that they can't do it, but you can do it and enjoy it. You don't have to be the best. Like, I think in our society, we're always looking to be the best at something. We're always mm-hmm. like competing with some fictitious like thing. And we're not just enjoying the things that we want to enjoy to do.
Yes, I agree. And I also have done some rural outreach through dance. And it is so different. I've seen it too, where it's, there is no mirrors. You're in a gymnasium and the kids are just there to have fun and do something versus the kids that I teach in the city who are also there to have fun, but it is just a different environment where it is more competitive. And I mean, I am not a huge fan of dance competitions and I think that they, yeah, whole other tangent, but that they do put these kind of unrealistic expectations on people that they have to be the best at something, but you can just do it because you enjoy it. When I go out dancing, I don't care what I look like. Sometimes I'm imitating parrots and monkeys, but it feels good, right? And I think for myself, giving myself permission to be silly and not care gives permission to other people to just try it. Like I tell people that if I see them and they look like they want to get into dancing, I'm like, come dance with me. Oh, no, 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 I don't dance. I said, I will go out there and I will be the craziest person in the world and everybody will look at me and nobody will be looking at you and you can do whatever you want, right? And then it's fun because they're laughing, I'm laughing, right?
Well, and it sounds like you have such a wonderful sense of self-confidence in what you do and how you feel about yourself. And that's wonderful because people spend a lifetime trying to find that confidence just to do something, you know, in public or something that they want to do because they just don't feel good enough to do it. And I really get the sense from you that that's what you want to bring out of people is that just have fun with it. Don't be so serious about it. Just try it.
Totally. Yeah. Thank you. I really appreciate hearing that. It definitely is a goal of mine to just, I want everybody to have fun in life, you know, and I must say genetically, like I definitely get that nerves of steel, undying confidence from my dad. Okay. So, it does play into it. But also, like I said, right, I've always been into alternative living and lifestyles. And from a very young age, I did not care what people thought of me. Like I am the person that even right now I've got floral tights on, striped socks, this kind of dress thing and a patterned poncho, right? I am comfortable. Doesn't matter that it doesn't really match.
Well, comfort is everything. I think sometimes we make ourselves so uncomfortable in life in general to, you know, appease other people or just to feel accepted or wanted instead yeah. of just doing or wearing or being like who we want, doing what we want.
Totally. And I think my choice of lifestyle, especially in the tiny home, really is because of that reason as well. Like I look at I work a bunch of like contract work, a bunch of little jobs here and there. I love it. Do I make a lot of money? No, but I make enough to sustain myself. And I thought if my goal in life is to have a house in the city and upkeep a yard, but also if I'm in the city, I'm going to need a place rurally to escape to. Like I'm going to have to get a job that has, you know, the financial ability to sustain that. And right now in my life, I don't really want that. So it was, how can I find a way to continue living the way authentically for me that makes me happy And who knows, like I am by myself. I have a cat. Her name is Raisin. She is the most adorable cat. But I don't have any dependents, right? So that could change in my future. But for right now, I just feel like it's the best way to set myself up for the future of having, you know, I don't want a $600,000 mortgage that I'm going to be paying off for the rest of my life, right? I would rather spend that money dehydrating meals so that I can go canoeing in the backcountry.
Well, and that's wonderful because you know that about yourself and you love that about yourself and you want to pursue that. And that's great. I have really enjoyed just our conversation today and getting to know more about you and feeling how much of a free spirit you are and how much you encourage other people to do the same. So I want to talk to you a little bit about what is your workshop offering for the Of Earth and Fire? No, I said that wrong. Is it Of Fire and Earth?
I think it's Of Earth and Fire. Yeah, I think you got it right.
Yeah, I got it mixed up. The Women's Festival coming up in July this summer. What is the offering?
So I wish I had a name for you. I tried really hard to get one this week, knowing this podcast was here, but nothing is sticking yet. So the concept of the workshop, though, is this like attitude of yes, you can in terms of singing. So I think that singing is one of the most healing things in my life. You know, even Mary Poppins, a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Right. Yeah. So, or I'm really on the Julie Andrews kick right now, The Sound of Music, right? Climb every mountain, all those things. So in my life, when I'm feeling disconnected, I always turn to singing first. And when Steph had reached out to me about wanting to do a group singing, I thought, perfect. I run a festival. It's called, or help run a festival called Sola Fest, S-O-L-A. It's for Seeds of Life Alliance. And last summer we did a sing-along and people, it was the highlight of the festival. Just here's a song that we can learn together, sing it. And people were singing it the whole weekend, which was really cute. Oh. So I thought immediately of that. And then I thought, okay, at a women's festival, right? You know, there's a lot of shared experiences as people who have been conditioned as women that maybe we don't have the ability to express safely. So the workshop is going to be a few different layers. One is just tuning, humming. It's the yes, you can, right? Even if you think you cannot sing, if you put yourself in a group of people and they're all just singing whatever notes, it doesn't matter if you're on pitch or anything like that. And in my experience, just letting people have free reign, I mean, with guidance, it's so beautiful what can happen. And these people that have maybe haven't tapped into their singing voices, have the opportunity to do that. So it's going to be a bit of mantras, mantra singing, and just a sing along all together, kind of unity and healing through music.
That sounds wonderful. I can't wait for that.
Me too. I'm excited. Typically, I'm not great at planning things. I like to fly by the seat of my pants. So it's really good to encourage and challenge me to actually write things down. I have a list, you know, bullet point list of things that I want to do. And I'm really lucky I have an opportunity in my women's group to, I'm going to practice before I do it at the festival. So I'm very excited about that as well to do kind of with my friends.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Oh, I was going to ask you something now. It just flew away what I was going to say. I think that sounds like such a wonderful workshop. And also, this is what I was going to say. It came back to me is that sometimes you can over plan for things because, and you know, it's good to have the idea about what you're going to do, like to be a little organized. I try to be, but I also find that when you go to these festivals and depending on the group of people that are there, or what the needs are, like you just pick up on that energy and then it sort of flows. And then whatever needs to be presented is presented to those people at any particular time.
Oh, I really appreciate that advice. Thank you. Yeah. It's my first time presenting at a festival that I haven't co-ran. So I'm really excited. And I think that shows too, like I do that in my dance teaching, right? You have a bit of an outline, but I never follow it. It's just whatever the kids come in. Yeah. If they're feeling you know, if the energy is feeling kind of depleted, I'm not going to make them run around. Like, that's not going to be beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true, because sometimes you can have the best laid plans and then, you know, as a teacher, you can get very stuck on it. Well, they have to learn this. And I think sometimes that's where I think that's what's hard about public school, like kind of going back to when you're talking about forest school too, like this. And I think this happens in life and workplaces as well, is that we can get so stuck on what the plan is supposed to be or what we're supposed to be doing. And we don't allow for the flow of human emotion about just being yes. human in particular, that, you know, especially when you've got a large group of kids, like 30, you know, in a classroom or something, where not everybody is going to be in the mood that day to do what you got to do. And we get so stuck on, well, we have to meet this, you know, deadline or, you know, thing at, you know, a particular time, yep. or, you know, and I think it puts a lot of pressure on people in general.
Yeah, pressure. And those kids are labeled as disruptive when really they're just like either unengaged or dysregulated, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and I do see this a bit more in schools, especially elementary schools, if you just take 10 minutes to do a grounding exercise or something, like, it is going to benefit you. It might take 10 minutes away from your lesson, but your lesson's only going to take you another 10 minutes instead of it taking 40 minutes because you're like, Jimmy, sit down, Susie, exactly. stop touching your neighbor, right? Like all these things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just, you know, teaching them, like, kids and yourself too, that to regulate yourself is so important. You know, I think yeah. a lot of people don't let their emotions get away from them. So I think it's awesome that you also do the emotional literacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, co-regulation about. Is a huge thing, right? I mean, I'm sure that you've experienced this as a parent. Your kids are, I know for teaching, the kids are always the craziest when I am not at my best because they pick up on your energy. So yeah. if I can do something that's like 5 minutes of just like sinking in, we're all together. Like a fun one that my kids really love is you all hold hands and then somebody touches their foot, or I usually do it, touch your foot to like a electrical socket. So you're not like electrocuting anybody, but then you pretend and you just like shake for, you know, 30 seconds and yeah. it's laughter and it's connective. And then it just like, oh, okay, I'm here. And it actually is grounding, right? Like that electrical current. You're like, okay, I'm in the space. I'm yeah. ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think those things are that people need to learn in general. So it's wonderful that you're teaching those to people as well. So is there mm-hmm. anything before we finish for today that you'd like people to either know about yourself or any other things that you teach? There's so many different things that you do. I'm like, now I have lots of questions and I'm like, I don't even know where to start.
Yeah. I mean, to not get into a whole other, you know, 40 minutes of talking, I think that the one thing I could just really encourage people to do is gratitude journal.
Mm.
I think that's been kind of one of the most revolutionary things of my life is just a consistent gratitude practice. And how I started was actually through a past partner of mine. And we would just sit down every day and write until there was nothing else in our mind. So today I am grateful for the sun, running water, and my cat. Sometimes it's three. Then maybe the next day I sit down and there's like 18 things that I'm thankful for. And I think doing that consistently was what really helped just alter my mindset about the world, about winter, about myself, right? And just seeing that, oh, and even in the hard days, like on the hard days, I still gratitude journal. And maybe it's just like, I am grateful that I took a day to rest today because my body really needed it. So I think that would be kind of my one biggest takeaway kind of in life that I hope everybody can do. And it doesn't have to be, if you're not a journaler, in your car, right? When you're driving to get groceries, just saying it out loud, getting it out of your head for your body to kind of redigest either through seeing it or hearing it, I think is really important. Yeah. And then if people want to follow me, I think you said you were going to leave stuff in the show notes. I do have a YouTube channel I just started about tiny home living. There's literally one video on there. So subscribe now and maybe you'll be the first in my array of followers for the years to come. And yeah, people can get a hold of me on Instagram at Elena Darla. And yeah, I think that's it.
Oh, well, that's awesome. Well, this has been so wonderful to talk with you today. And thank you for reminding us all about the gratitude practice. I think any moment that we have to just practice that a little bit, it can take you really out of your head and the things that you're worried about. And just have that moment. It's not that you have to pretend that other things don't need to be taken care of, but having that gratitude for the things that are important to you or that you enjoy can totally bring back that joy that might, you know, have been squashed a little bit by, you know, sometimes the pressures of everyday life. So that's a wonderful reminder. Thank you for that.
Yeah, of course. My mantra is always be kind, choose happy.
Nice. What a great thing to leave us with for today. So thank you for joining us today. It's been wonderful to talk to you. I can't wait to, I know I'll see you on Instagram and probably at some of the meetings that we'll have over the next couple of months as we all prepare for the festival, but I can't wait to meet you in person.
Yeah. Likewise, Kelly, this has been really, really fun and I can't wait to meet you in person. It's kind of funny meeting people on Zoom and then you meet them in real life. You're like, oh, I actually know you though.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Take care.
Yeah, you too. All right. Thanks everyone for joining us today.